Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? For the best-selling author of Talking Back to Prozac, Medication Madness, and now Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, it's the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour with guests unafraid to speak the truth about psychiatry and psychology and about how you can make the most of your own life.
And this is Dr. Peter Bregan. And today's show, we are going to have a very interesting disclosure about the Newtown shootings. Adam Lanza. Before that, I've got a couple of other interesting shows coming up. I don't usually talk about the shows I have coming up. I'm not sure why. But these are so interesting that they seem inescapable. I've got to tell you about them. On October 16th, next week, I'm going to have on Howie Glasser. He's a psychologist who developed the nurtured heart approach and works with children and families. And the nurtured heart approach also works with adults. Howie is a genuinely inspiring human being. I've had him at our conferences. I've been at other conferences with him. He's one of the few therapists I think about when I'm working with people, especially with children, and I feel stuck. And I think, what would Howie do? So he's really, really worth listening to. And that's going to be next Wednesday at 4, and, of course, always archived. The week after that is another very unusual treat. Joanna Moncrief is a psychiatrist and author and a professor from Great Britain. Of all the people who hold any kind of establishment position, and she has a good solid one, she is among the bravest, perhaps the bravest. She's written a number of really good books, and her most recent just came out as The Bitterest Pill. She is just a really good soul and very, very brave and knows her science up and down. She and I don't agree on everything, but she is someone who appreciates my work, and it's going to be just a pleasure to have her on. So that's 2 weeks from now. Psychiatrist Joanna Moncrief. She's a part of Great Britain's critical psychiatry movement. And really a super, super person. And finally, I'm going to be speaking at the R.D. Lang in the 21st Century Conference. Lang is spelled L-A-I-N-G. Lang is one of the two or three psychiatrists that has had the most influence on incisive critiques of the profession and on alternative therapies in particular. It's the R.D. Lang in the 21st Century. It's at Wagner College on Staten Island in New York. And as I've said before, I haven't talked to New York in a long time. So I'm hoping we'll have a good turnout there. It's October 25th through the 27th. I'll be talking on Saturday from 1 to 2:30. R.D. Lang in the 21st Century. My guest, are you there, Sheila?
Yes, I am.
Oh, and you sound bright and cheery. Sheila Matthews. Sheila's important in a number of ways. You all know who listen to the show. I think having a meaningful life with higher purposes is just incredibly important to our happiness, satisfaction, and to what's right in the universe. And Sheila is one more demonstration, and a particularly solid one, of someone who just discovers an injustice. She's not even the victim of the injustice, as we'll see. Potential victim, but it didn't happen. Involved one of her children who was recommended to be put on meds and wasn't, and is doing marvelously as a grown young man. But that so shocked her. And in the process of trying to figure out what was going on, she went online. She found a friend of mine, a woman I've worked with in her legal case, Pat Weathers. and we'll talk some about Pat, because with Pat, Sheila Matthews is the founder of Able Child. And before we're done today, you're going to get the most shocking information about Sheila's efforts to bring out of the Attorney General's office in Connecticut their knowledge about what medications the Newtown shooter was taking. And if I sound a little hoarse today, I'm recovering from a root canal. So I think I'm doing surprisingly well. I had a root canal this morning, but I'm doing well. Sheila, hi.
Hi.
Where would you like to begin?
Well, I really like to talk and reach out to moms and how I got involved. As you described, I have two boys, and my oldest son was 7 at the time, and he was so eager to start school. He was very verbal at a very early age, and he was very excited about school, but soon after he started, he was coming home really discouraged. And then I started getting all these phone calls, like many parents do, about their children's behavior. And I, you know, went to school several times, and then the school started recommending, telling me that he had ADHD and that I needed to put him on psychiatric drugs. And I was petrified. You know, it wasn't something that I felt comfortable doing, and I didn't really have anywhere to turn, and I really didn't know enough information about it. And the information that they did give me was all very pro drug, very pro psychiatric labeling, and I really didn't know where to turn. And I was, you know, I just believe everything happens for a reason. I was preparing for my meeting where I was going to face like the whole staff, and I know parents know these IEP meetings where you have to go to school and face all the teachers, and it's just you and your husband or just you. And I was getting ready that morning, and I turned on the TV, and I happened to see my current partner, Patricia Weathers, testifying before Congress regarding behavioral health drugs and children. And she was describing a situation that happened to her where she put her son on Paxil, and he ended up attacking her, and she felt that wasn't something she wanted to do, and she believed the school. And so I reached out to Congress, and I got her number, and I called her up, and she said, "Sheila, I don't know you, but do yourself a favor and look at all the information. They're not telling you everything." And so I told her I would call her back. I went to the school, and I said, "You know what? I don't believe in this ADHD stuff, and I don't want to put my son on any medications. He's only 7. And that's really how I got involved in this. And because I reached out to another mother, and I was petrified, and I didn't know what to do, and she helped me, I decided right then and there that if this could happen to me, and it happened to this other mother, then it's happening to other mothers. And we had to join forces and start to speak out. And that's what I did. And, you know, it's been a long journey, and I haven't regretted it in any, I'm so glad I didn't put my son on psychiatric drugs. And I felt like with Patty and I that we could do this battle, and so other mothers and fathers wouldn't have to go through what we went through.
Now, you're a volunteer, right? You don't get paid anything. Probably cost you money to run this reform effort.
That's right. Patty and I gathered money from other parents around the country, and we raised money to get incorporated as a 501(c) organization. And then we took the other money. We ran a couple of local fundraisers, and then what we did was we developed our website, our community, which we've had for over 13 years now. And every dime that we get, we reinvest in our internet community. And most of the time, to be honest with you, Peter, I take a lot of money out of my own pocket to go to hearings. Like tonight I have a hearing, and I make all the copies myself. So it's a nonprofit, and we don't take any grants from any special interest groups, any mental health or drug companies, any state or local or federal government agencies, so we have an ability to stand up to our government and be very point blank. So not having money has helped, but it's hurt in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I'm sure it has. I'm sure it has. When you decided to not to medicate your child, did the school give you a hard time? They gave Patricia a very bad time. The drug actually was making her son psychotic, and the school was saying it can't be the drug. I mean, what did they know? It was a school psychologist, as I recall, saying it can't be the drug, who was trying to force her to take the drug and her son to take the drug. And she fought back, and she refused, and her son has recovered.
Mm-hmm.
And she's become a reformer. Mm-hmm. How did the school react to you as a mom saying, no, I won't do this?
They were very upset because I lived in a very small, wealthy community, and I was very verbal, very, like I wrote letters to the editor, and I went to Board of Education hearings, and I was like standing up and saying, you're not giving all the parents the information. So not only did I not drug my son, but then I started to really speak out, and you know, the phone calls continued. They kind of took it out on my son a little bit. I would have to say that he had some hardship, you know, just some social issues that they really made very difficult for him. You know, in the long run, I think my son respects what I do and what I did for him. And, you know, I think that, yes, they gave me a very hard time. Plus, when I started introducing Able Child to the local Board of Ed and my school system, they rejected Able Child right out. And they still don't allow Able Child information into the public school system. They don't. So parents kind of have to find us on their own because we don't have an advertising budget. You know, we do put out press releases here and there, but overall the school system and the government has rejected our organization's mission statement. So it's been very difficult. And the school, to answer your question, was very upset with me because I you know, not only did not drug my son, but I was very vocal in the community. But being that I had my partner as a support system, Patty, it gave me the confidence to stand up. And that's what our hope is with Able Child, is that we can give other moms and dads the confidence to stand up and say, you know what, I don't believe in ADHD, and I want alternatives. You know,
I think you're doing marvelous work. What I'd like you to do is talk a little more about the specific things you've been involved with. I know you've been involved with television. You've been involved with Virginia Tech and other places. And then after the break, and I'm going to leave this as a little tantalization. I think this is the first time I've done what all show hosts do. It's the first time I'm going to say, wait till the second half, because I'm going to read you something. I'm going to read you something that came out of Able Child's lawsuit. That's Sheila Matthews and Patty Weather's organization. It came out of their lawsuit against the state of Connecticut to get them to say what Adam Lanza was taking, the horrendous shooter there. And I'm going to read you a statement by the Assistant Attorney General that was captured on video And I'm going to do that the second half. It was captured on at the start of the second half. It was captured. Who took the video?
Actually, Jill? I hired a video, an independent video graphic, you know, a photographer, a video guy. I hired him with a parent's money. And we hired him to come and tape the hearing.
Now, have you got the video up on YouTube?
Yes, we do. We have Connecticut Television also videotaped it, and that's, you know, for everybody to see the full length of the hearing, which is, it is really a very good case. You know, so it is up. I do believe it's up on our website and also on Connecticut Television. But we hired our own video guy because we've learned from past experiences that all of a sudden their taping doesn't work and, you know, that type of thing. So
yeah, you bet. Well, we'll put it up on YouTube, too, in my collection.
Good.
So we want to get this out as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Heck, I don't think I can wait till the second half for this. Tell folks about what happened, what you've been doing in Newtown, Connecticut, and then I'd like the pleasure of reading this amazing thing that you captured on audio and video. So tell folks about what you're doing in Newtown.
Sure. When Newtown happened, a local mother called Able Child, and I actually happened to have worked with her prior on her son's case, and she lived two blocks from the elementary school, and she called me up and she said, "Sheila, please, we want Able Child's help. We don't want this ever to happen again." So quickly after the tragic mass murder and suicide, Able Child went up and we collected signatures trying to get the release of the toxicology report and the medical records of the shooter, Adam Lanza. And we went to the Newtown dump and we collected massive amounts of signatures, like basically out of 100 people, 95% said, absolutely, we want this information. And while we were collecting the signatures, two cop cars came flying into the dump and asked us what we were doing, and they shut us down. And, you know, I didn't really want to put this mother at risk, so I said, you know what, we'll leave. And then I had enough signatures, and I reached out to a couple of people and told them what happened, and they volunteered to help us file, you know, documentation to get the through the Freedom of Information Act to get the documentation released to the public. And so with us doing that, we have had this pretty much 9-month battle with the state of Connecticut. We have gone through every procedure to get the records of the shooter released, because in the aftermath, not only we are doing the trying to get the records released, at the same time we're battling going up to the state house to battle against the massive mental health screening that they want to do on all our children. They want to mandate all this ADHD and all this mental health screening to prevent future Adam Lanzas. And our whole point is, listen, you need to find out what treatment this boy did receive, and if it was a contributing factor to the mass murder and suicide. We know this because we've worked on other school shootings. And, you know, pretty much 9 out of 10, as you know, have been treated via psychiatric drugs and already were in the system. So that's basically what we started to do in Newtown, and it's been a battle, you know, with the governor. He just refuses to release the information, and he's, you know, a lot of his filings, we went before this commission, which you saw the video, And the governor has been slamming our organization, saying we have this war against psychiatric drugs, when in fact our mission is informed consent. So at the end of the day, it's up to you whether you want to use psychiatric drugs or not. We're just into giving the parent all the information so they can make an informed decision. So that's what our work has been really focused on the last 9 months up in Newtown.
All right. Now, set up for folks this hearing. There's about five or six people at a table at this hearing, as best as I could tell.
That's right.
Set up what it is. And then I would like the honor of reading what the Assistant Attorney General said. I gave the clip to Ginger 5 minutes before the show, and my wife, bless her, she went and typed out the statement that came so herky-jerky out of the mouth of the Assistant Attorney General. So set that up, and then I'll read it.
Okay, sure. The woman at the table is the hearing officer, and so we had an opportunity to present our case, and we submitted a lot of FDA documentation of the link between antidepressants and violence. And so we submitted our information, and we made our case. And then afterwards, the state had the opportunity to make their case, of why they did not want to release the information to the public. So our case basically said that we want to give the public this information so they can make informed decisions regarding any mental health treatments, plus the public needs this information to protect public safety. And then the state's attorney basically presented his case and the reason why he did not want to release the information. And I'll set it up that way, and you can read why the state does not want to release the information.
Okay, this is from Assistant Attorney General Patrick Quanashie, Quanashie, a statement that is on Able Child's website and that I'm going to, and on YouTube, and I'm going to put it on Bregan YouTube. And this is very tortured language that amounts to an admission that they can't release the information because, in fact, antidepressants played a role, and that in Adam Lanza's actions, and this would be a terrible thing for people to know. Seems like an admission of that. So here it is. This is the Assistant Attorney General. No matter how the outcome of the use of antidepressants or the causal link between the use of antidepressants and the kind of violence that took place in Newtown, that's not a legitimate use of information, that information. So we'll let that one sink in. No matter whether or not there's a causal link with the violence, that's not legitimate information. You can't use it that way. Then he goes on and he says, you can't generalize just from one case. Even if you can conclusively establish that Adam Lanza, his murderous actions, were caused by antidepressants, you can't logically from that conclude that you know that others would commit the same actions as a result of taking antidepressants. So he's saying, well, even if he took antidepressants, you know, we don't want this information out because people will conclude that, you know, this indicates a risk.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is important as an indicator of risk, combined with all the other information we have, some of which we'll talk about today, I'm sure. And it's certainly information of great public health importance. So then he goes on to say, so it's simply not legitimate, and not only is it not the use to which they're proposing to put the information, not legitimate. So he's trying in some tortured way to say that they're going to use this information in some other way other than to establish, I guess, a link between the drugs and the shootings. I'm not sure what he's getting at. And then he says, and I'm going to read this slowly, and this is the last sentence I'm going to quote. It is harmful, that is, to release the information. It is harmful because then you can cause a lot of people to stop taking their medications, stop cooperating with their treating physicians just because of the heinousness of what Adam Lanza did. Folks, I read that as saying that he knows that Adam Lanza was on antidepressants, but he doesn't want to make it real information because it will stop people from taking their meds and stop them from cooperating with their doctors, quote, just because of the heinousness of what Adam Lanza did. And, of course, this is the exact opposite of informed consent, which is the whole theme of Able Child and some of my work as well and some other folks. This is saying, we don't want you to have informed consent. We don't want you to know. Mm-hmm. Now, I think, in fact, all this comes down to drug company pressure. The drug companies have such billions involved in all of this, and also such billions involved in potential lawsuits against them, that they've managed to exert pressure top down. I don't have proof of this, but... they've managed, it seems no doubt to me, to exert pressure from the top down and to prevent anyone from hearing about what drugs Adam Lanza was on. And I can add to this that I know at least one Connecticut legislator who was trying to get information on this and could not get information on what Adam Lanza was taking. So, folks, we live in a lockdown. There's a lockdown on information going on about psychiatric drug use, and it's particularly telling right now because we now know that the Naval Yard shooter was on an antidepressant, just started a few weeks before the shootings, trazodone, which can be very stimulating. It's often sedating and used in that way, but it's clearly a drug that can agitate, has all the same violence warnings as the other antidepressants. And the odds are we're going to find out that this lady who lost it down in Washington, D.C., and was driving her car crazily around with her child in it and was shot and killed, child wasn't hurt physically, that she probably was on meds. So this is, this is just one thing after another. I give after an unusually long commentary by your host here, Peter Pragin, I give you back to Sheila Matthews. Sheila, anything to add to that? And we got about 2 minutes.
Sure. I'll tell you this. In addition, when we were at the hearing, the state said that they had disclosed the toxicology report, and they put it out to all the media, too, saying that the toxicology report was released and there was no drugs or marijuana or alcohol in his system. Well, the fact is they never released the toxicology report. And what they submitted to us was a cover sheet, a lab cover sheet, and none of the lab results were behind the cover sheet. So they basically went to the media and said, we released it and there was nothing in Adam Lanza's blood. But in fact, they did not release it. They gave the media the cover sheet. And it did not list all the drugs that were tested for. So there's a big conflict of information of what they're giving out to the public and what is actually occurring. So, yeah, I think you described it, like nailed it. It's top down from the pharmaceutical companies, and they don't want this information out.
And they have such power. I think one of the main reasons we're not hearing more about the Washington shootings, and particularly the horrendous shootings at the Naval Yard is that there's such a direct link this time. We got a direct, publicly and described link about the VA medicating him a few weeks beforehand with trazodone, about him getting a refill and the likelihood that he was on it, and even if he was on it, it may have flipped him over. We'll go to break now. I'm talking with Sheila Matthews, whose work is to be praised profoundly. And stick around, and we're going to keep talking with Sheila after the break. And this is Dr. Peter Breggin, and my guest, Sheila Matthews, is the co-founder of Able Child, along with Pat Weathers, who couldn't be with us today. And she's doing marvelous work, all volunteer work, all because she saw a problem that was afflicting children, even though it didn't end up afflicting her child because she refused to put him on drugs. She decided that it was really important to do something about this. Sheila, did my work play a role in the early stages of your learning about this stuff?
Actually, it did. A couple of things that actually after I got to think about it last night also came up. When my son was seven, I really felt like I said he started verbally speaking very early, and I always thought he was gifted. And I actually reached out to an organization in Rhode Island called the National Association for Gifted and Talented Children. It was run by an older woman, and I went to actually see her in Rhode Island. She's since passed away, and she raved about you. She was like, there's one man that's standing up to all this, and that's Dr. Peter Breggin. And that's where the first time I heard your name, actually. And then Patty, my partner, was very happy with your assistance. I mean, in the entire industry of psychiatry, there isn't a great deal of psychiatrists that are actually speaking out against this human rights violation. It's really... and the deaths of these children and saying something about it. So, I'm so honored to be on your show actually today, because it's like I always looked up to you, especially as a volunteer. I was like, Dr. Breggin is like, just really a pioneer in it. So, I've always admired your work.
Well, thank you for that. We didn't know that. You didn't recall that when we were chatting last night, and that's really cool. That's very, very nice. Talk about anything you want, including your involvement in some of the other shootings, what you're doing, what you're planning to do with your organization.
Sure. I'll tell you, one of my other passions when I started Able Child with Patty was we started getting phone calls from parents that actually weren't wealthy and weren't in towns like ours, and but were in the foster care system. And our Able Child ended up doing a lot of work on the last 10 years in foster care. And because there is no informed consent for children in foster care, the state has that informed consent, and they embrace the drugging of children. And so a lot of these children end up, on massive amounts of psychiatric drugs and young as 7 years old committing suicide. And so Able Child actually worked with Diane Sawyer. Diane Sawyer was doing a one-year-long investigation of the national issue of drugging children in foster care, and they reached out to our organization, and I ended up supplying them with a lot of information from Connecticut's foster care system So that has really been a passion of mine, has been working within foster care. And then we were able to get two drugs, Paxil and Effexor, banned for use in children in foster care in the state of Connecticut, and we made the New York Times on that action. And that was writing letters, going to the state capitol, and saying, you know, this is unacceptable. So that's been something that that we've been really passionate about over the years. And so where we're going forward now...
Hang on a minute. That's marvelous. You actually got a ban on giving Effexor and Paxil to foster care children in Connecticut?
Yeah, for a six-month review. So I don't know whether or not, I actually don't know if they reinstated the use of those two drugs, because we get so busy that we really didn't, we weren't able to really follow up, and they just changed the other to other drugs that are just as dangerous. But
yes, but it's a great precedent that here, two folks, mm-hmm. two mothers, neither one with a law degree or a mental health degree.
That's right.
Got together, formed an organization, and are having this kind of impact.
Yeah.
I think we want to just pause on that, not let it slide by. I think this is so, so important. I should have asked you about this on our earlier phone call. Are you familiar with Mother Bear Can, the new organization that's trying to provide a family support around these kinds of issues and about getting help for their children that doesn't take money from the drug companies like NAMI and doesn't push drugs?
No.
You might get, well, let me try to hook them, you up with them. And you can also find them on the web, Mother Bear Can, and I'll email you some contact information, although there is also, for the rest of you, there is contact information for my listeners. Mother Bear Can, Ginger and I are both on their advisory council, and they've got online educational programs for people, families that have an upset youngster, and it's to help you negotiate the mental health system and to give you tons of information, including some of my stuff, to arm yourselves with as a parent. And they're also setting up dens, Mother Bear and Papa Bear dens. So I'll put you in touch with them. That's an organization that you should get in touch with. And Jennifer Maurer, M-A-U-R-E-R, it was on one of my earlier shows for my listeners and also for you, Sheila. And Jennifer Maurer talks, she's the head of Mother Bear, and she talks about him on one of my earlier shows not too long ago. So talk about then some what you're going to go on to next to describe what you've been doing.
Well, it's my hope to, there's a couple of legislative goals that we have. One is to mandate all suicide victims to be able to get a toxicology report. So we never have to go through like this 9-month fight again. So any, mass murder, suicides would be automatic toxicology screening, and then that information would be disclosed. So that's one of the big pushes we have that is going to take some time and effort. And, I'm hopefully going to Texas in the coming weeks or months to help on the foster care system there, because there was a death of a child and the behavioral health vendors that they used, they never switched over from when we did some work back in Texas. So I've reached out to the Texas governor, who has been very responsive. And so, we just hope to continue our work on informed consent within the public education system, foster care, and then contribute anything we can to prevent another mass murder suicide. you know, that is our goal. We want to make sure that the public has the right to go out and be safe in cafes and schools and universities. And we want to make sure that that if there is an issue with a drug, a safety issue, that that it's flagged and the drug companies are held responsible and they have to either pull their drug or reformulate it and give better informed consent. So we're a strong advocate of the MedWatch system, which is the our drug safety system. So we're going to try to continue to support the MedWatch program and educate legislators and the public on their right to file side effects from drugs. I don't think most people know that they have a right to fill out a MedWatch form if one of their loved ones commits suicide and they've been on psychiatric drugs, that they should be able to fill out this MedWatch form and submit it to the FDA, because then that protects the nation. It protects other people. You know, it's like we don't want to continue to have this continuous rise in suicides. We want to be able to protect public safety. So that's our hope going forward. But we do need money. I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, we have a hard time asking for money. But any contributions are great. We welcome them. And you could do it right online at ablechild.org.
And you're a tax-deductible organization.
Yes, we are. We are.
Do you have any other specific projects? Do you want to tell anything about your involvement at Virginia Tech or at Red Lake?
I did a lot of national media on the Red Lake, where I was calling for, our organization was calling for a federal investigation into the link with the mass murders and the psychiatric drugs. That is something we still are really urging the public to call for hearings on the federal level regarding the link between the mass murders and the psychiatric drugs, because, like, as you said, the Navy Yard mass murder, that has already been verbally disclosed that psychiatric drugs were involved. And that's a prime example of why we need these federal hearings, is we need to get to solution-based. We can't continue to let the pharmaceutical companies market away and, oh, that person was crazy, that person was this and that. You know, where we're missing this critical data and this critical information. So that is something that's really ongoing with us. And then the Virginia Tech, we submitted, I think it was Senator Kane was in charge of that committee, where we submitted information regarding the link between mass murder and psychiatric drugs. We submitted testimony to the Virginia Tech Commission, which they ignored. And it didn't show up in their report. I mean, our testimony's in the report, but the conclusion was more security. So we're not getting to the cause. We're not getting to the solution. We're allowing, you know, the drug companies and the psychiatric industry to continue to divert us from figuring out how to solve this mass murder suicide epidemic in the United States, which is directly linked to the psychiatric drugs. So that's what we're going to continue to work on. And we're hopeful, you know. I like the way you said, you know, look what these two moms can do, you know. I am hopeful that by following the rules of the system, that we are going to be given the equal and same rights as that of the drug companies. And that has been our intent going forward, you know, is you don't need a lot of money to make a difference. It helps, but you need the desire and the passion. And one person can make a difference. I'm living proof of it, and so is my partner. And it's been, you know, Peter, it's been a stable, wonderful part of my life. It's a passion. You know, I've learned a lot. I've been on television. I testify in front of Congress and the State House. It's an education that I would have never gotten if I didn't stand up and try to do something to change this. So
one thing that I hadn't thought about, I've never discussed before, but actually parents and moms and dads who have direct involvement in these issues actually get more opportunity to go before Congress and state houses than well-known experts like myself, whom they're afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
So I testified before Congress once in the last several years, and then has to go back, you know, maybe three or four times over the years, five times over the years. And often the press is less afraid of, but also just flat out more interested in the human interest stories, and is more responsive to non-professional organizations that are dealing with these issues. And that's very interesting, because you've actually testified, it sounds like, more before local legislators in recent years than I have. And it isn't because I wouldn't consider it. It's just that people are afraid of those of us who have taken strong stands, but they feel more comfortable, less threatened by bringing in people who have been injured or family members who are interested, and folks who don't have the high profile. So you're functioning in many ways more effectively in some areas than I could function because of my high profile as a psychiatrist, and hence it's a huge threat. It's a good work.
Yeah, I find that avenues are opened up for a reason, like over the years, and I know Patty can attest to this statement as well. I don't want to put words in her mouth, but there has been times over the years that we have been like, okay, we're not getting any funding, we hardly have any money. Like, what are we doing? Like, it's, you know, Thanksgiving weekend, and we're updating our website, and we're like, we just want to give up, you know. And then something will occur, a door will open, somebody will call us for an interview, or something will happen that triggers us to move forward. And that's how it has been over the last years together. We've formed a friendship, and, you know, it's just been a miracle. You know, it's a tragic, horrible issue, but it has brought so much light to my life. I don't know if that makes sense at all, but it's just, it's an amazing ability to feel that you're sometimes the only one that's holding this issue out to the people. And even though you're not getting tons of press, I mean, we have gotten tremendous amount of press over the years, but even though we're not, like, given the respect like NAMI, who's funded by the drug companies, or CHAD, that's funded by the drug companies, or the PTA that is so pro-drug, or the, you know, all the people that are operating within the system, even though we don't get that power and that that recognition, there's something internal within both Patty and I and the little community that we have that it empowers us so beyond what they have. I don't know if that makes sense.
It makes total sense. Oh, yeah. And I want folks to hear this, because anybody can have a meaningful, fulfilling life. There are so many good purposes out there, and way beyond the ones that you and I deal with. There are purposes everywhere in the world, because there's suffering everywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Whether your concern is with adults or children, on a whether it's with animals, nature. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's there's so much that happens that's destructive, and there's such need for people that all you have to do is open your eyes and ears for about 4 minutes and think a bit, and there are purposes everywhere. And no one needs to go through a life without a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And having a purpose or several purposes, I think, can make all the difference in the world. And it's so interesting to hear you talking about it. You've been doing this a long time now, 13 years.
Yeah, 13 years. And I have to tell you, everybody knows me, and, you know, in my community, my family supports me, and they're like, how's Able Child doing? Everybody always asks, like, it's like a child for me, you know, so it's, you know, and they're like, what are you working on? And you know, so it's been a really interesting run, and I really feel that America and this country is ready for the truth, is so ready to support these children that have been misdiagnosed and labeled and drugged, and give them what they rightfully deserve, which is a proper education. We all suffer from behavioral things, but to drug them down is only going to hurt our entire generation going forward. And you can see it. You can see it. And, you know, these kids aren't born murderers, you know, in my opinion. But I'm not a psychiatrist. But I have to tell you that, you know, looking at Adam Lanza, he was this little pencil kid, very petite. And in my mind, when I look and I think of my son at 7, and then having somebody pump drugs in him from the age of 7 to, you know, 19, what would he be? Maybe he would be a monster at the end of the day. You know, so we need to kind of really have the conversation in order to make the changes. And you know what? I don't think the drug companies are going to go out of business if we rein them in and we set barriers up and we say this is unacceptable. You can't drug these kids without giving the parents all the information. At the end of the day, if they want to do it, that's their choice. But to withhold information so they can't make the proper decision is just unethical. And I truly believe that this society is kind of understanding it. I mean, look at the Navy Yard. You know, it's out there. Everybody knows when there's a mass murder, what was the kid on? So, you know, maybe our time has come. You know, maybe this is the turning of the tide.
Well, I think it is absolutely the turning of the tide in the public. And I think that people have to realize the pharmaceutical industry isn't going to change on its own.
No.
In fact, when they get into a problem, like they find an adverse drug effect has suddenly gotten disclosed to the profession, they set up committees to counter it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't set up committees to explore it. I know this as an expert who looks inside the companies. They actually set up apparatus to suppress the information. They'll go and find doctors who are doing research that may not turn out right, and they'll buy them off. We'll discourage them. We'll see they don't get published. So it's a very active process. Only an extremely active process could keep the Attorney General from allowing the disclosure of what Adam Lanza was on, because it's so obviously vastly important public information. And only a press completely dominated by its relationship to these huge advertisers, and not just the advertising, but the interlocking boards of directors and the psychiatrists that these people are seeing who are running these newspapers and writing for them. Only huge forces like that could keep them from picking up your story and playing on 60 Minutes with some other show, CNN, on the news or on Fox. You know, only huge pressure could keep them from picking up and giving huge play to the Attorney General's remarks. I think they're incredible. I want to read his last sentence again. I'm just going to do the last sentence. This is the Assistant Attorney General, Patrick Quanishies, Quanashie, of Connecticut, explaining why, at a hearing, Adam Lanza's medications should not be disclosed. Quote, it is harmful, because then you can cause a lot of people to stop taking their medications, stop cooperating with their physicians, just because of the heinousness of what Adam Lanza did. What twisted reasoning, that we can't let people hear the bad news because they might make use of the information. It's most extraordinary. What's the worst personal or public opposition you've run into in your work? Have you ever gotten scared, Jill?
Yeah, I've gotten scared. I got scared in Newtown when, the police flew in and shut down my petition. That was pretty scary. I've gotten scared up at the Capitol in Connecticut, at hearings. When I was actually after the Newtown, they had special hearings, and after I testified calling for the disclosure of the documentation on the shooter, I walked out and I was confronted by a woman who got into my face and called me a liar. I was like, oh, my God. You know, so I've been scared a couple of times, but I truly believe, I have so much faith that I'm doing this for a reason, that I'm protected. I do feel somewhat protected because I'm very verbal, and I feel like if something happens to me, people would put it together. I don't know if that makes sense, but they would be like, wow, you know, maybe it was their work. I don't know, and I've been a little bit afraid up at the Capitol, I have to say, and in Newtown. But other than that, I've had really good experiences. I do know when I testify before a committee, you kind of know who's been bought.
You can see it on their faces.
Yes.
We're coming to a close. My guest, Sheila Matthews, Able Child. Find her easily on the web at Able Child, doing great work. And thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Peter.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.